This is the Saxo Market Call, daily insights on what is moving the financial markets.
Hello and welcome to the Saxo Market Call. It is Friday, 28th of January, 2022. And yesterday, another session, a lot of back and forth, a lot of churning. It seems to be a theme lately. We're seeing these rallies that are then erased and then they reemerge. Yesterday, in the cash session at least, closing for a new daily low close level. We didn't reach those intraday lows, but sort of a downbeat session. And then, Peter, we had these just another amazing quarterly earnings report from Apple, really blowing it out, not held back by the semiconductor situation. So, yeah, we're up a bit here, U.S. futures-wise. Asia was mixed. What's your takeaway here? You know, it seems like the market's scratching around for new themes here.
Yeah, we'll talk about Apple later in the podcast, but it seems like we didn't print a new low for the cycle in the NASDAQ 100. I think that was a little bit encouraging. We're bouncing back here. The first retracement level on this whole, the current cycle we're in is around 14,430-ish in the NASDAQ 100. So that's just above the highs from yesterday's trading session, just to have that on your radar. But yeah, in terms of themes, I think the red thread, so to speak, if you look across the theme performance overview on slide two here, all the themes that did well yesterday were actually all of these themes, except for semiconductors that I mentioned in my equity update on which things to own during an inflationary period. I think the market is quite clear what you need to do. And, you know, the commodity sector did well. Financial trading, that does well when interest rates rise. And also high interest rates and higher inflation creates more volatility in markets. And that's good for financial trading firms. So watch out for that one. India is still doing well. Cybersecurity was bid, mega caps and logistics. So I think that group of themes is definitely one of those you should have in on your radar and you should bolster your portfolio with. Also, the defense basket is still doing well, and that not so much because Russia and Ukraine, but just simply the fact that, you know, you could say that the conflict is underpinning the need for Europe to get its act together. And France is really very pro that the EU will build out slowly a more professional army that is, you know, EU oriented or whatever you want to call it, and generally that inside the NATO, all the EU countries, they really need to increase their spending over the next 10 years, as the US is not providing a free for all military umbrella any longer.
Yeah, there was a positive news, at least a positive or overture, if you will, from the Russian Foreign Ministry yesterday, relative to what the you know otherwise has been a very threatening drumbeat, as we saw. This quote, unthinkable that Russia should have a war with Ukraine. That was from the foreign ministry spokesman. He also spoke optimistically about some talks to be held in a couple weeks between France, Germany, Ukraine, and Russia. So, you know, where that's heading, we don't know, but it did see a pretty considerable recovery in the Russian ruble. But cycling back to the theme baskets and the performances there, I just can't help notice the 800-pound gorilla, if you will, in the options market and in this equity market for the speculative space, Tesla, having an extremely ugly session despite that very good earnings report and resting really close to some key Fibonacci retracements and the 200-day moving average. Just want to highlight that just as a, you know, it's a stock you have to watch.
I have it later in the podcast.
Yeah, merely because of its weight and people and the presence speculative space. It's something to track as an indicator. Another thing I'm tracking here is we're seeing the U.S. Fed expectations pinned at the highs for the cycle pretty much after this FOMC meeting where we saw those comments in the press conference really keeping the expectations high for the near term. That's called the next year to 18 months of where the Fed is headed. Not so much further out the curve. Again, that terminal rate relatively stable. And if we look out the 10-year, we actually erased most of those gains in yields in yesterday's session. We're bobbing back higher this morning, but I'm really watching the U.S. yield curve because of how aggressively it's been flattening. And where we are relative to prior cycles, this is only the third hike cycle, after all, since Greenspan was hiking back in the early 2000s. Got a chart for perspective on slide three where you can see the 5 to 30. Yield slope in black and the twos, tens in blue. And you can see that we're already at only a positive 43 basis points here in the 5 to 30 relative to where it was at 125 basis points when we achieved liftoff in 2015 and even above that back in 2004. Of course, yields at the longer of the yield curve were somewhat higher, but not that much higher for the 2015 experience. What am I saying here? I'm saying the market is suggesting the Fed is still very constrained in how far it can go before the growth prospects and the economy are rolling over here. On the other hand, there is a lot of talk out there, a very complex subject, too much for today's podcast, that the eventual move into quantitative tightening is going to see a liquidity pinch for longer end or much more long end supply for the U.S. Treasuries and much higher longer yield. So we'll have to watch that closely as we head into a quantitative tightening regime after supposedly that March rate hike. We also saw some important data yesterday. U.S. GDP for Q4 up at a ridiculous plus 6.9% annualized. Remember, that's annualized. And the headline or the takeaway was that this is less positive than it looks on the surface, because 4.9%, so the bulk of that was on a massive inventory build. It's sort of a one-off. We can't expect to repeat there. And we're probably looking at a very ugly Q1 GDP, because on the services side, we are seeing pretty heavy impacts from Omicron. Therefore, we have this sad situation where we're still waiting for this these virus effects to clear, and we probably won't get a sort of a clean read on where the economy is until at least Q2 in the U.S. And the dollar, of course, rising aggressively with those U.S. Yield expectations. I'm a bit surprised to see dollar yen where it is. You can see that on slide 4. We are reapproaching those highs that were posted in the first week of the of this year, but U.S. Long yields are fairly stable. So I to get to these new highs above 116 plus, I would like to see the U.S. Longer yields breaking out. The 10-year yield, for example, in the U.S. heading towards 200 basis points. But you see how the dollar is now registering a significant gain. And Ola, I have to note that we're really seeing gold and especially silver stumbling. I noticed copper also helping to drive silver lower. And if you look at that 5-day change in momentum on our FX board on slide 4, that is the lowest reading is in silver. We have a minus 6.7 reading there. It's extremely an extremely negative sudden jolt to the downside. What's your focus here in the metals markets, Ola, as we're seeing something like a copper retreating?
Yeah, it has been a troubled week for the metal space with the rising dollar and the jump in yields. This is that has had quite a negative impact on both industrial and precious. And I think silver has been hurt through the link to the industrial metals, where something like nickel is down around 7%, in line with what silver has lost as well. So we have to remember we came into this. This week, with very strong momentum, or at least a breakout, the market was looking at saying, "Well, we have priced in the market's priced in rate hikes for the year, and we've got inflationary pressures still on the loose, and that attracted buyers into these markets, so what we're seeing right now is quite clearly just long liquidation, and I don't think we're seeing much in terms of fresh short selling at this point, but long liquidation can obviously take this market quite far as well. But generally, it's been a strong week for commodities, but it has been led primarily by the energy sector, and to a certain extent also grain. Some focus on Russia and Ukraine, but generally the tightness in the oil market just has been really a key driver with Brent hitting $90. But what attracted some quite a bit of attention yesterday, and it's not really impacting a few, is a historic squeeze in natural gas. I'm just showing that here on slide 5. We came into we had expiry yesterday in the February contract, and apparently a few shorts had struggled to get had either forgotten or not or were waiting for a setback. They didn't come, and suddenly the market squeezed 70% higher. It's the biggest squeeze we've seen since the contract was launched more than 30 years ago. So that attracted some attention. But as you can see on the blue line, this is the March contract, the new front month, and it has been trading higher as well in anticipation of colder weather in the US. But generally, further on the right here, you can also see that the natural gas and inventory storage in the US is a complete different situation compared to Europe. We got gas more or less trailing the 5-year average here at this moment in time. So plenty of gas to go around. So just some end of contract shenanigans.
And then I see you have something we don't follow a lot. Ammonium nitrate exports. Russia talking about halting this until April. This is your headline in slide 6. What on earth is this? I guess this is about supplying the market with fertilizer.
Yeah, well, you can just almost say adding insult to injury when it comes to Russia and Europe. We already has the gas crunch, which to a large extent is driven by low supplies from Russia, geopolitical concerns and so on. But adding to this, as you can see on the chart here in slide six, ammonia prices has already been on a tear. We are trading a factor three above recent averages due to a lot of the input into ammonia production comes from natural gas. And now with Russia ahead of their spring season, they respond to a domestic situation. So if wheat prices are going too far, they put curbs on wheat exports. And now they want to curb the export of ammonia, but just make sure they have enough and at affordable prices as we move into the spring season. So again, something that's potentially making it even harder to get by for European farmers. And if they do get hold of it, they have to pay a very, very high price for it.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how this the coming growing season shapes up with these fertilizer situation and all that natural gas disruptions over the winter here in Europe. All right, Peter, plenty to look at. We had the granddaddy of all market cap stocks, Apple, out reporting last night, as we talked about at the top of the show. Take us through that and where your focus is otherwise on names today.
I think Apple as a company would be very sad if it had a feeling to be called a granddad when it's a technology company. Well, anyway.
The grand poobah, I don't know what you
want to
call it.
No, fair enough. But they reported very strong quarterly revenue figures. I think they beat expectations by $5 or $6 billion, better than expected on the bottom line. They're so far managing the global supply chain disruptions. There was only the iPad that missed expectations because of very, very ugly, as I said in the earnings call, very ugly the supply chains for the iPad specifically. I don't know what that is inside the iPad that makes that particular bad, but they were saying that the global supply constraints were worse in the calendar Q4 last year compared to the previous quarters, but things are improving a little bit. But as I said on the internal call, Apple is the biggest company in the world. They're getting priority by all the suppliers. So if Apple is feeling things are getting better now, it probably feed through to small and medium-sized businesses in a year time from now. They said growth will decelerate quarter on quarter in the current quarter. So, but their shares were up 5% in extended trading. And all the earnings yesterday actually lifted the overall earnings per share. But I'll get back to that. Robinhood, I put in here on slide seven with a price chart, looks very ugly, right? And also because ARK Innovation Fund was actually a major shareholder around the time when it was IPO'd back in August. So that hasn't helped on Cathie Wood's performance. And they disappointed a lot on the revenue, net revenue trading outlook for Q1. They missed by more than $100 million and given only slightly more than $400 million in revenue for a quarter. That's a pretty big miss against consensus. And I've put in this slide from their own slide deck, where you can see monthly active users. So you can see they have dropped 4 million active users in just two quarters. And I think this is a testimony to what we've talked about. There's a lot of new investors and traders, speculators in the market that haven't been with us for a long time. And what they are experiencing right now is deep pain. It's psychologically very hard if you have never experienced a 50% drawdown to suddenly experiencing. And I think there are more headwinds to come for Robinhood. H&M is a big story today in Europe. Beat on their growth margins by almost 2 percentage points. They put out a 9% annual revenue target, which is very ambitious, I think, for 2030. And then Tesla, as you mentioned, it closed just above the 200-day moving average, which proved to be a very critical support level back in August of last year. So, and Tesla, we know, is a key sentiment engine and driver around crypto and all the other speculative growth stocks that are part of the Cathie Wood. I call it a complex because I think it's very intertwined there. So keep a watch on Tesla.
And as we're winding down the week, Friday, not usually a very big earnings day, but we have a couple of interesting names out today I'm seeing on your slide here.
Yeah, Chevron and Caterpillar on slide eight. Caterpillar obviously being the giant inside the global construction sector. They always give a perspective on what's happening in China. So we'll obviously be tracking that. But then Chevron is the one I've highlighted here on slide eight on the chart to the right. I've taken the total return index on Chevron, so that including reinvestment of dividends, and I've squared it against the MSCI World. And I just wanted to show you how massively repricing is in global equity, sorry, energy equities. And I think Chevron actually yesterday rose past its previous peak. So something is really changing now in global energy. And it's one of those, we did it a big presentation yesterday for clients. It's the focus of our Q1 outlook. And I'll say it, I think the expected return for the global energy sector over the next 10 years is somewhere between 10 and 12%. I think there's a lot of alpha hanging around here with these very, very elevated prices in oil and gas.
All right. And let's look at the macro calendar for today. And I have the highlights posted for next week as well in the overview on slide 9. Today, a couple of key things, the most important one being the PCE inflation data point expected at 4.8% versus at the core a year on year versus the 4.7% in November. This is delayed, of course, relative to the headline CPI numbers or the basic BLS CPI numbers that have already been out some time ago. But it's important because it's the Fed measure of inflation. And this 4.8% level, if it's realized in today's print, would be a new high since 1983. So the Fed, of course, has its work cut out for it to get to that forecast, which could look embarrassing in hindsight as we near it, the 2.6% forecast for this year for PCE core inflation. Those numbers are going to be very important going forward as we watch the Fed's reactivity around the economy, the markets, and what it's doing at its FOMC meetings. With that inflation level stays well elevated, that's, of course, a key indicator for prompting Fed further Fed action. The final version of the... Ole.
And I think we just have to mention, you're obviously going on to next week's highlights, but I think we just need to mention as well the Chinese New Year, which basically kicks off on Monday. China will be closed all of next week. On Monday as well, they'll be joined by Hong Kong, South Korea, Taiwan, and Vietnam. So that potentially could have an impact on, or has been having an impact on some of the commodity markets, especially those deriving their demand from China. So just potentially an impact on industrial metals and precious metals over the next couple of weeks here.
Yeah, we'll have to definitely note that in our calendar, update our calendar with that for next week. And then we have the final Michigan sentiment survey. Again, it's very interesting that this is at 10-year lows or near 10-year lows when the major conference board indicator is only showing a slight dip and nowhere near where the Michigan survey is. Curious to see which one of those proves more prescient. Next week, lots on the calendar. I don't want to run through all of it, but the Australian RBA meeting is quite interesting because this is their where they're going to shift their guidance. They're going to end QE. How much do they sort of confirm the market expectation for 100 plus basis points of tightening when they're still doing QE right now the market is pricing for this year? And we have the Bank of England also expected to hike. They're expected to hike 25 basis points. The ECB up on Thursday. When are they going to crater on their insistence on keeping rates unchanged at negative 50 basis points? All the usual first of the month surveys, January, ISM manufacturing and non-manufacturing or services next week. And then the key employment and earnings data in the US and wondering if that proves a little bit tepid this month because of the Omicron impact, et cetera. Again, we've seen some pretty big impacts on the services level, things like open table reservations for restaurants, et cetera. Again, it's gonna be a month or more before we start to get more clear of this Omicron variant impact, even as some countries, luckily one of those being us here in Denmark, are opening up fully more or less next week. All right, that is the call for today and for this week. Let's see where things stand when we hit next week. And stay careful out there. Markets look like they're going to remain volatile for now. Have a great weekend. We'll be back next week.
Thanks for listening. This has been the Saxo Market Call. For feedback and questions, reach out to us on Twitter @SaxoMarketCall or by email, marketcall@saxobank.com.